This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We've been talking about Special Counsel Robert Mueller delivering his report to Attorney General William Barr and said that it reveals no Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. And there are those that say they want to see the whole report and they're not going to believe any of the conclusions reached by the Attorney General, William Barr, until they get to see all of the underlying data that was issued in the report. And here to talk with us about that on the line is former U.S. Attorney Harry Rosenberg. Harry, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel, it's always good to talk to you and your listeners. Thanks.
So, Harry, you know, this word exonerate has been thrown around a lot. And I just want to kind of put this to rest first. Do special investigations, grand jury investigations, and just investigations in general, do they always lead to an exoneration?
No, and in fact, just to the contrary, Newell, that's what one of the things that surprised me in Bob Mueller's report. He's a very talented, very experienced prosecutor and investigator, but I didn't expect him to actually allude to whether he believed that the president was exonerated. Either there was a crime committed, which that was his charge, or there was no crime that he was able to establish or believe should be pursued with an accompanying prosecution. And that's typically why these reports, or large portions of them, are not shared with the public, because if somebody's not charged, there's really no fairness to that individual in talking about the evidence that might be there but was not enough to pursue a criminal prosecution.
So when we think about this, and we'll just jump to the second part first of this obstruction charge, and I really, not to be gross, but I kind of said that, you know, Mueller's approach of this, of not being able to reach some conclusion and handing it off to both William Barr and Rosenstein, and in the case of Barr, he gets to that position by virtue of a political process, so to speak, which is not the case as it relates to Robert Mueller. The appointment of the special counsel is more of an administrative process, correct?
That's correct. And frankly, the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General made it clear that they were not looking at these issues in light of President Trump's position as President of the United States. They were considering it based upon the normal prosecutorial criteria and standards that they use in deciding whether to prosecute any individual.
So when... You know, so I said that this was the turd of all turds when he uses the language that, you know, we didn't have enough to charge him, nor did we have enough to exonerate him. And I asked the question in this vein, and this is kind of where I'm thinking. Robert Mueller was the FBI director at one time. And I wonder whether or not he's having trouble coming to grips with the fact that the FBI director was removed, and whether or not it was the president's intent to punish Comey or otherwise, does that really matter in evaluating this obstruction charge?
Well, of course, Newell, it should not, as you and your listeners know. I mean, everyone in America realizes by now that Mueller and Comey were close friends. They worked together in the Department of Justice. They worked together in their respective roles as directors of the FBI. But frankly, I thought that it was stretching a bit for Bob Mueller to talk about whether the evidence did not exonerate him. That, frankly, was not his role, but the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General made the decision that there was no evidence to pursue a criminal prosecution for obstruction, and they used the, as I said, the norm standards, not something that was special to the president. In fact, they even made it a point that they recognized that a sitting president should not and could not be indicted for or criminally prosecuted, but they pushed that aside and said, we're going to take it as the average Joe or the average Jane, and those are the standards that the Department of Justice apparently used.
So what elements, Harry, would have to be present for the regular Joe, you know, for an obstruction of an obstruction of justice charge to lie?
Well, I think, Newell, you know, the Attorney General laid out those standards in his summary report. I mean, there has to be an intent to deter or to somehow discourage a criminal prosecution or a criminal investigation. And the key words that both apparently Bob Mueller used, although we haven't seen his report, but that Bill Barr, as the Attorney General, used in his summary, was there has to be a corrupt intent. And he said there was no corrupt intent that he could discern, and therefore there should not be any criminal prosecution for obstruction.
And it was not unlike that the president didn't forecast everything that he actually did throughout the entire process. He was almost an open book about any number of actions that he took, was he not?
Well, that's exactly right. And Newell, as you know, that was one of the very points that the Attorney General made, is that the President of the United States is. Conduct was open at all times. People knew exactly what he was doing when he terminated Comey. So this was not hidden activities that might fall arguably within the scope of obstruction. And that was another factor that obviously Bill Barr thought was important to mention, and that even Bob Mueller mentioned in his report.
Harry, can you stay with me through the break?
Sure, I'm happy to.
When we come back, I want to talk about the importance of why grand jury testimony should not be revealed and the complication of revealing same in this case. We'll be right back with Harry Rosenberg, former U.S. attorney. This is Newell on WWL. We're back and we're talking to Harry Rosenberg, former U.S. attorney. And Harry, Jerry Nadler from the House Oversight Committee and a lot of the Democrats are saying that they want this full report revealed, which means that they would have to compromise grand jury testimony in this case. How important is it to keep grand jury testimony secret?
Well, Newell, that's a cornerstone of the federal criminal process. Rule is a rule known as Rule 6E, and it requires that grand jury testimony be kept secret and remain secret, even if there's not an indictment. And there is several important reasons for that protection. One, it protects the integrity of the grand jury proceedings, and two, it ensures that the investigative powers of a grand jury, which is held in a secret setting, is used strictly for intended criminal justice functions. And I'm a little surprised that these representatives, whether it's Adam Schiff or others who are lawyers, just blow past Rule 6E and say, we want to have the Attorney General come in and give us the full report. I mean, there's that consideration, that is the integrity of Rule 6E, as well as another important facet that the Attorney General mentioned in his summary report yesterday, which is that some of these facts may impact ongoing criminal investigations, and that would prejudice those, or could prejudice those ongoing criminal investigations. So to just produced the report carte blanche, as some of these Democrat representatives are clamoring for, just seems to be at odds with basic notions of justice.
They even talked about bringing Robert Mueller before the House Oversight Committee. And, you know, we're all governed by the rules of the Bar Association, and we would run violative of those rules if we start answering these questions without somebody's got to give somebody dispensation somewhere. I don't even know where you get that, to even engage in these conversations.
Well, Neil, that's a very good point. I mean, here you have members of Congress across the aisle, in both parties, who strongly endorsed the work of Bob Mueller, strongly echoed his integrity, and had very, very outspoken comments about what a good job Bob Mueller would do and is doing, and wanted to protect that work. And yet, after he submits a report that is normally not disclosed to the public in full, although the Attorney General is trying to parse out which portions he can share with the public, they want to summon both the Attorney General and Bob Mueller before their respective committees to testify about the report and to produce the report. One of the questions, I guess, is going to be whether they accommodate these committees, and if they don't accommodate them, whether the committees will try to hold the Attorney General or Bob Mueller in contempt. But I think we've moved from an investigative moment to a political circus. I hate to say that. I'm trying to be objective, but it looks like we've reached closure of the investigation, and yet people still want to pursue it and pursue the very same issues that Bob Mueller was requested to examine, and he did examine them.
You know, Harry, also, they've interviewed 500 witnesses whose names have been kept secret, many of whom testified before the grand jury. Why should their lives be completely ruined, their names being revealed to Congress? Ultimately, the media gets a hold of it. They'll be camping out on their front lawns. They didn't do anything to anybody.
Well, that's exactly right. Just appearing before the grand jury conjures up a notion of criminal conduct, which is the furthest from the truth. I mean, you can appear before the grand jury as a witness, as a cooperating witness, as just a fact witness, Newell, as you know. And besides just the grand jury appearances, they, as you know from the summary report, Bob Mueller had basically 15 orders authorizing pen registers. And that pen register is basically, in lay terms, a way to track telephone calls or computer communications. And again, those individuals who might have been the subject of pen registers have not been charged with any crimes that we know of, and yet they're going to be subjected to invasions of their privacy.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes this guilt by association three-ring circus, and it was 50 orders authorizing the use of pen registers. You know, you could have gotten a very innocent email from somebody or a phone call from somebody that had much to do about nothing, and all of a sudden we're off in this conjecture world that we witness every day in the media, and people's reputations are completely destroyed.
And I think that's important, Newell, because beyond just the pen registers or the grand jury appearances, we've seen, at least from the Attorney General's summary, that there were almost 3,000 subpoenas issued by the special counsel. There were nearly 500 search warrants obtained by the special counsel. There were more than 200 orders for communication records that were secured by Bob Mueller as special counsel. All of those documents and requests are going to impact the lives of those individuals who may just be a fact witness and may have done absolutely nothing, and yet they're going to be smeared by attempts to delve into their privacy.
You know, what's interesting to me is that we spent a lot of time talking about how Bob Mueller has done an incredible job keeping a wrap on this, no leaks, preserving witnesses and all of this. And all of a sudden, we just want to blow all of that up that he worked so hard to accomplish over a two-year period of time and just start summoning people before congressional committees. And who knows where it's going to end.
Well, and that, Neil, that is a valid point. I mean, the request by these committees of the House of Representatives, particularly, are almost redundant of the work that Bob Mueller has done for the past 2 years. That was his charge. That was the purpose of having a special counsel. And now they want members of the House want a do-over. And I think a lot of the American people are going to say, wait, enough is enough. We've had thorough examinations. There's still ongoing criminal investigations. But let's stop. That was the role of the special counsel. He fulfilled it, and we don't need to replicate what he did over the last 2 years.
Harry Rosenberg, thank you so much for joining us. We always appreciate your insight, my friend.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Newell.
All righty. That's Harry Rosenberg, former U.S. attorney. Glad we were able to clear up what, you know, some of these investigations should or should not reveal. Want to get your reaction to it? Stay with us. We'll be right back after the break. We'll go to the talk lines. This is Newell on WWL. They popping champagne corks in the White House. The president, no collusion. And now Michael Avenatti's accused of attempting to extort millions from Nike. Federal prosecutors have accused Avenatti, the attorney known for representing, Stormy Daniels in her lawsuits against President Trump, of attempting to extort millions of dollars from Nike by threatening negative publicity right before an earnings call in the NCAA men's basketball tournament. In court documents filed Monday, prosecutors in that same district that's prosecuting President Trump, the Southern District of New York, said that Avenatti and a client, a former AAU basketball coach, said that they had evidence that Nike employees had funneled money to recruits in exchange for their commitments to college teams sponsored by Nike, and that they would release them in order to damage Nike's reputation and market capitalization unless Nike paid them, listen to this, at least $22.5 million. If I were the president, I might go buy a lottery ticket. Let's go to line one, talk to Mike in Metro. What say you, Mike?
Afternoon, Neil. How are you?
Doing great.
A few quick comments on the last guest. Not a Trump fan at all, but I do agree that them pushing this stuff after the report is not good for the country. It's not good for us. Personally, the fact that it's always been somewhat more political and there's, you know, the talks of impeachment are going to kind of go away. You know, I want the voters to decide. I really don't like the idea of these type of things being handled by politicians. That being said, though, on the collusion stuff and everything, you can take them for how you like them. But I do find Chris Cuomo to be somewhat as fair as he can be on CNN. And he's always kind of said, don't really expect the conspiracy stuff. That's a really hard, hard thing to prove. And he's a former lawyer. And he even said without that proof, without a reasonable doubt about the agreement part that had to be established before it even started, and then to tie that in an obstruction over a crime that may have never been committed. His point was, is asking for this to turn out to be a criminal thing is a big ask. But he's also said, but why should that be a bar for the president of the United States? So going, my point is politically from the get-go for somebody like myself, it's always bothered me the fact, which is undisputable, that they were willing to take information from the Russian government, his campaign Jr., Kushner, Manafort, and Trump's denials, knowing they know. There's no doubt that they know that they interfered. And I hate when they say that the Mueller investigation was a waste of time. Well, they did find issues with 27 Russians that interfered with the election. So that idea that, oh, this means nothing, they tried to interfere. That's a big part of this investigation. And his continued denials of them being involved, including saying, I believe Putin over our intelligence agency. The point being is that, for me, his ego, that even if he didn't collude with them, which I agree with, but the fact that he was willing to accept help, and for his own ego, because he didn't want to have the idea that somebody helped him win, it's all about him. That in itself, to me, is a bigger problem. And I'm just curious to see if somewhat independents like me are going to think about that in 2020. Is the kind of the Republicans in the middle going to weigh that what we know about him against the idea that, well, we did get the tax cuts and we're getting our justices on the Supreme Court? At one point, does the man's mental and emotional makeup become more important than some of those issues? I'm just curious on how it's going to play out.
Well, you know, Mike, let me tell you, every candidate out there, for the most part, especially at that level, hires opposition research companies. Where these opposition research companies get the information on their opponents, more often than not, the candidates never know. So the reason I bring that up, has in the past 30, 40 years that they have really been, you know, revealed themselves to the forefront where they've been working these op research firms, have they received information from foreign governments or foreign powers? Absolutely, positively. No doubt in my mind. I'm not naive enough to believe that that hasn't happened. But we were naive enough to believe that in order to stimulate this investigation as it relates to Trump. And that's where the problem is, because that was an op research paper. And in, it was a group that was originally hired by the Republicans, ultimately hired by Hillary Clinton, and they played and gamed the system for their benefit.
We're talking about the dossier, but
for you to say that it's a narcissistic personality trait of the president, that's every one of these guys that are running for office. Okay? So I mean, they received this information. Any candidate, if somebody came to me and said, hey, I got something real juicy on your opponent, if you don't think they're not going to sit down there and listen, you're sadly mistaken. Now, the question is whether or not they're going to use it. I know of candidates that received it and refused to use it, even though it was valid. We don't know whether or not Trump would have ultimately used it or not. So it's all conjecture on our part. But it happens.
But it happens every day.
It happens every day in this country.
I understand the argument, but we also have.
No, it's not an argument. It's a reality.
I understand that reality. I also understand the reality that he refuses. To back his own intelligence agencies. And like you said, now the fact that they even offered it, let's say he didn't even use it, the fact that they knew they offered it.
Well, why should he back his own intelligence agencies? You've got Brennan, who was the predecessor intelligence agent that actually started this down this path, and Clapper, both saying last week that he was going to be indicted and that the Mueller report was going to reveal collusion. They knew it, lock, stock, and barrel. You got Shifty Schiff saying the same thing, getting everybody in this country to believe that by virtue of their chairmanship of those important committees, that they've seen evidence of collusion. And now you have Robert Mueller, who everybody thought, you know, was the right guy at the right time for this thing, doing 500 search warrants, 2,800 subpoenas, 230 orders for communication records, 13 foreign government requests, and interviewing 500 witnesses, and comes back and says there is no collusion, and we still don't believe it.
Well, here's the only part with that argument. I understand what you're saying real quick. I know you're getting to a break. But as far as the Brennan and other stuff, Trump, they got offers from Russia. We know that to be a fact. And they still went on this train of there is no interference by Russia. They offered them help. They told them, we will provide you. They knew that, regardless of what Brennan and everybody else says. I get that picture. But they knew what they were trying to do, and they still were beating that drum for whatever reasons, that, oh, how do we know it's Russia? They did know it was Russia.
Yeah, and they also knew that the day that they cleared Hillary Clinton in July of 2016, they were in London meeting with folks about trying to hook up the president, the soon-to-be-elected president. That they knew as well. We'll be right back after the break. Thanks for calling, Mike. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we'll go to the talk lines. Jim in St. John on line 3. What say you, Jim?
Thank you, Sheriff. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Sheriff, you're talking about this oppositional research.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've been talking all about it. Could you explain a little more what's allowed, what's not allowed, and also do you think that there should be more delving into what I think is the greatest political scandal or hoax in the history of this country? Like Trump said, you know, the other side, you know, it should be looked at. I know you've been talking about, I've been bouncing around on the radio station and television. So, but I appreciate your thoughts on that.
Opposition research, you're allowed to basically do anything that's not in violation of the law. I mean, so, you know, they look at a lot of the public data that's out there. They check court records. They check credit reports. They will actually engage private detectives and have you followed. In fact, if you remember, when I was a sheriff during the governor's race, then-candidate former Senator David Vitter had hired private investigators to follow some people around. I was at a coffee shop having coffee with a group of guys, and they had a guy there videotaping and trying to hear what we were talking about, which was nothing. It was a very eclectic coffee group that we have, and we talked about everything under the sun. And he was trying to videotape and audio tape our conversations. I don't think that I was I didn't know that at the time, but ultimately I wasn't the subject of what they were trying to videotape. It was somebody else at the table. We ended up catching a guy. It was an investigator out of Texas.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it kind of blew up. But that's the means in which they'll go to as it relates to this op research that they're running on folks, always trying to catch some little hook or something. And they follow people around everywhere. When they give a speech, they try to act as though they're just a constituent that's in there, and they try to videotape you, and they try to catch you saying something or try to catch you in some compromising situation or with that, whatever, for the sake of embarrassing you. So really there's no ends to what they'll go to. Now, whether or not the candidate ultimately uses it is a different question.
But now, is that oppositional research in itself, is that illegal?
No. Now, do some of these companies engage in illegal activities? I would suspect they probably do. I think they have some that are less respectable than others. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you think like Trump is talking about? You know, this. In other words, the other side, wrongdoing, the Comey, Clapper, Brennan.
Why does James Comey get to release information? And by his own admission, he says he did it in order to stimulate the appointment of a special prosecutor. Why does he get to shirk? Who's James Comey that he gets to shirk that? Why does he get to bend the rules for his own benefit or retribution because he didn't like the fact that President Trump fired him? Whether you like or dislike President Trump, why should we allow any federal employee to run afoul of the rules for their own personal gain?
I don't
think they ought to be able to do that the same way with Andrew McCabe, the same way with Lisa Page, the same way with Peter Strzok, the same way with Bruce Orr. All of this cast of characters. Why should all of them be able to move the needle one way or the other for their own personal benefit or in furtherance of whether they have a bias, a political ideology, or otherwise? I don't think there ought to. I think it ought to all be looked into. Now, the IG is looking into it. The problem, though, is that the IG does not have criminal authority. So there would ultimately have to be a referral made and a whole separate investigation to be had. Jim, I got to get to a break. Thanks so much for calling. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we'll go to the talk lines. Bobby in New Orleans. What say you, Bobby?
Hey, Newell. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks
Quick
for calling.
Comments. Here's my feelings. First of all, you were saying in the first hour, why shouldn't America be happy today when our president was found exonerated from no collusion with the Russian government? I'll tell you why. Because many Democrats, many in the mainstream media, including CNN and MSNBC, Adam Schiff, and the rest of those people, many of them, hate this president more than they love the country. And what about the 31 people that were investigated? Corey Lewandowski, Corsi, Mike Covito, who was on CNN the other night.
Yeah, Mike Caputo.
Their lives have been turned upside down because of this this investigation. So, you know, I'm going to have some cold adult beverages tonight. Enjoy the moment. And some pretzels to go along with it. Enjoy your show.
All righty, Bobby. Thank you so much for calling. And that's how we started. You know, we talked about how ill is the country when we're not excited that there was not any collusion by anyone involved. See you again tomorrow. Thanks for your participation. Scoot's up next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.